Let's take a trip down memory lane. It's time for Niagara County's Great History Show.
And good morning, everyone. Today is Wednesday, November 10th. In the Niagara History Show, we usually have Melissa Dunlap here with us, and she does all things history, but she is not available for us today. But what we do have is a really special treat. We have an author, Shelley Richards, who has written several books on St. Patrick's Cemetery, and she is currently finishing up the final touches on Grace Episcopal Church, A Select History. So good morning, Shelley. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm fine. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so happy you were able to come in and talk to us about your work. I did a little bit of research last night, looking up some of your books and things that you've done. Boy, are you thorough. Holy smokes. Well, first off, let's get to know each other a little bit. Tell me a little bit about yourself, your history, and how you came to be so passionate about the history of Lockport and Niagara County.
Well, I am a longtime resident of Lockport. I was born and raised here. My family was born and raised here. My parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, and on my mom's side, and also partially on my dad's side. My family goes back to Lockport as early as 1836, so we got a long history here, and history's always fascinated me, something I've become passionate about over the years. I think since I retired 3 years ago, I've become more passionate about it because I have some time to even devote more to it, and I got into the book writing thing as a way to give back to my community and be able to donate funds on behalf of those books. I wrote 2 volumes for St. Patrick's Church, and all those proceeds went right to the church, to cemetery, to support the cemetery. I finished a volume on Glenwood Cemetery last year, and that's, in fact, how I met Mr. Moss, at that time when I was in the middle of writing the Glenwood Cemetery book, he asked me if I would consider writing the Grace Church history book. And I said, I can't do it right now, but I will when I'm finished. And that's what happened. Actually, a year ago, right this month, when I published the Glenwood Cemetery book, I turned the page and started on the Grace history book.
That's wonderful. I see here the latest numbers is you have donated over $2,000 of proceeds from these books. So this is just purely a labor of love on your part?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Got to figure out what my next one's going to be now.
That's so. Right. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about your latest writing, the Grace Episcopal Church, A Select History. It's from 1835 to 2020. So, and now Mr. Moss, he was a co-writer with this?
Yeah, essentially he became a co-writer. Didn't start out that way, but he was had given me so much guidance on the content, and we collaborated on the content. And he is underwritten, obviously, the publishing of this book. So it's really been a real partnership with Skip. And it's funny later in your life how you gain new friends. And Mr. Moss's passion for Grace Church, he's a longtime leader in that church. He was a warden and a vestryman at the church for many years, led the rebuilding of the church in 1975 to 76 after the fire, the tremendous fire that burned it down. And he was passionate when we spoke. He was so passionate about that this church had meant so much as a place of worship over the years, but it was really a community institution as well. And I was struck by that as well. I kind of, you know, I'm not an Episcopalian by my faith practice, but I became very, very kind of attached to finding out the story and Mr. Moss's passion for telling the story, especially after it closed in 2020. In February of 2020, it was closed as a parish. And so I took the task on, and I just literally engrossed myself in the task for the past year. It's been what I've been doing. So
that's wonderful. So now you are from the Niagara County Genealogical Society, which is housed in the same building as the Niagara County Historical Society. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Over on Ontario
right.
Street?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So speaking of Ontario Street, I was speaking with Melissa, and she wanted us to mention the Winterfest Eve
yes.
at the Colonel William Bond
yes.
House. And it's going to be Thursday, December 2nd, which is right around the corner,
right.
I hate to say it, from 6 until 8:30 with live holiday music. They're going to have tours, some mulled cider and cookies. And this 1824 National Register home is located at 143 Ontario Street. It will be fully decorated. It will be children's crafts and family events for ages 5 and up. Bonus, if you wear an ugly sweater in honor of Dave Caldwell, there'll be a free membership free for this winter. this event is driven by donations. There's no fee to get in, but if you can donate to the Historical Society, that would be a wonderful thing as well.
Right.
So is your involvement in this as well?
I'm not involved in that particular piece, but just to say, though, we are so very grateful the Niagara County Historical Society, which their main building is located at 215 Niagara, which is where the genealogical library is. Mr. Moss is graciously, all the profits will be split equally between the Niagara County Historical Society and Glenwood Cemetery. So any profit realized from this book through the people purchasing the book will be split between those two organizations. And in perpetuity, in terms of how, you know, matter how long it's being, you know, out for sale. So
very good. So mm-hmm. that's a forever deal. Well, very good. Well, by golly, I think why don't you start just tell me about your book?
Let's get into it.
Let's get into the meat and potatoes of what this book is about.
Well,
so very interesting.
Yeah. First off, it's a 200-page volume. It is in full color. I've seen an author's proof of the final product. It's absolutely going to be an absolutely gorgeous book. It's really tremendously well printed. I mean, I've done, like I said, a few of these, and this is probably the most outstanding printing job in terms of how it's going to actually look I've been involved with. It's really, really a beautiful piece. It's extra heavy paper and so forth. The cover, and that's another thing I want to say, Mr. Moss commissioned a painting of the exterior of the church by internationally renowned and local artist Kathleen Giles. So the cover will have an exterior view of the church, and it is beautiful. It's a beautiful painting. I've seen the final product, and so that's on the cover. It's broken out into 6 different chapters, and the chapters include a historical timeline for the first chapter. The second chapter is all about leadership. So the priest leadership, as well as the lay leadership, the wardens and the vestrymen. And really, one of the parts I'm also pleased about that I was able to, I really wanted to bring in the forefront the women, the female leadership at this church over the course of the years has been absolutely tremendous. And the more I looked into it, these women literally financed the fitting out of the church over the years with all their activities and guilds. And the female activity in this church is really something to be very, very, very proud of. The third chapter is about the church structures. Over the course of the years, there's been 3 main churches, 2 rectories, 2 parish halls, and 4 different chapels. And this chapter also deals with the fire that happened at the main structure in 1975 in great detail. And I'll go into that a little bit later. I'm going to kind of review the chapters in a little bit more detail with the audience later. The fourth chapter is about the old Episcopal Church Cemetery, which was located on Lincoln Avenue between Hamilton Drive and Pine Street, almost in the about the halfway point there, and discussing the details of who was there. And then actually that was removed to Glenwood Cemetery in 1930. And I'll go over that a little bit later, too. Probably one of the most beautiful chapters is the fifth chapter, and that's called Select Interior Elements and Artifacts. And this highlights the organs that were part of the church. And Glenn, or excuse me, Grace was heavily noted for its music, not only at the church, but in throughout the city. They were huge commitment to the organ music as well as their choirs, the boys' choir and the girls' choir as well. There is a huge part of this chapter is about the windows, the stained glass windows, and that plan over the year, how it was implemented and so forth, full color of the windows, the post-foyer windows are a highlight of that chapter. And then the final chapter is called Select Events and Ministries. And while there's so many things, in fact, I've seen a couple of people post already in some of my postings that they talk about the dances. I didn't deal with too much with the dances. I mentioned it. But this focuses on the Anglican shop, the thrift shop, and the pet food pantry, among the other things, as well as a brief discussion of the Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, which have been held there for many years. So that's kind of just a brief overview of the book and the six chapters. There is a nice Hilda Woody, who was a longtime member at the church, recently passed away. And at the end of the book, we have included a nice little memorial to Mrs. Woody in the back of the book. So.
Oh, how nice. Very nice. Boy, it looks like you've got all your ducks in a row here. So we have a nice overview of what the book is going to contain. And there's how many pictures are in this book?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. A lot. Let me just put it that way. A lot. And we had a lot of support in getting those pictures, accessing those pictures. Lockport Union Sun and Journal was a huge contributor of their online presence, old newspapers. We did our best at, you know, obviously fixing those up. Mr. Dan Foley, who was a longtime leader at Grace Church, gave us permission to use his beautiful, beautiful church stained glass window pictures, which are the feature in chapter five. They're full page, and they're just absolutely stunning. Lots of contributors to that. His wife Leah Foley was donated a lot of her scrapbooks for my review, and so forth and so on. This book was written during the pandemic, so what's I didn't travel as much as I probably would have and visited people and places. We had to make some choices with that. But it's amazing what you can find locally in the local libraries as well as online. The online resources, if you know how to use them. I'm a longtime genealogist. I know how to do research, you know, find things that people can't typically find. And some of the things I found were you know, pictures that I'm sure have never been seen before, archival photos. So they're all in here, and especially the ones that I'm sure people have never seen before. So,
well, that's going to be great. Okay, so chapter one.
Yeah,
let's just do a little deep dive here.
Yeah, a little deep dive. This chapter was this was kind of something I did in my three other books. This kind of historical timeline really sets a great context over a period of, you know, 185 years, which is how long this church had been in existence. It really sets kind of you can see how it developed. You can see how it the leadership developed. You can see when the new priests came in and left. You can really get flavor for the impact and the operation of the church over time. So this really integrates a wide variety of resources that I was able to kind of pull together in one spot that, you know, you don't typically see in one spot. A huge help was the every 100, 125, 150, 175, Grace Church was very, very big at celebrating their history and having these anniversary events. And with those, each of those events, they created these booklets that I was able to get a hold of. So that really kind of informed a lot of my, you know, my own timeline, looking at their timelines, and then integrating lots of newspaper research, which was very valuable. FultonHistory.com is a repository of many, many local newspapers, and I'm a big fan of that website, and I really culled that particular website for Lockport Union Sun Journal Lockport Daily Journal, Lockport Journal articles over the historical periods of time. And those are weaved in with other historical volumes that have been written and that Grace Church was included. Mrs. Walker was of the church. She was a great writer of the history of Grace Church, and I used a number of her articles that appeared in the paper as well as were in writing. So this really integrates all of these and really covers the earliest dates of actually 1829, which was when the church originally began to form, and then in 1835 when it really got itself together and went on after that. It failed between, people got together and then it was lost is the way it was described in one of the histories. The other big thing that really informed this in a very, very big way was a history that I found. It was an 8-page history. I believe it's the earliest written history of the church. I believe it was written by Dr. Faber, who was one of the most prolific leaders, early leaders of Grace Episcopal Church. And he went right back. He was referencing some of the oldest newspapers in Lockport, like 1836, 1843. He was referencing right in this earliest history. In my book, I've called that Grace Church History circa 1900 is the way I refer to it in the book. But that has really informed when I began reading later histories of Grace Church. That was really the root history. So that is really embedded in the timeline. The other thing I did about the timeline is I tried to include things that were just give you a flavor of the history of that time and the writing of that time. And I wanted to read a brief passage. Would that be okay?
Oh, that'd be fine.
A brief passage. And it was about a wedding. And whenever I read about the Grace Church weddings, I go, oh, my gosh, I can't. The flowery language.
Let's hear it.
Yeah, let's see if we can get some couple excerpts. This was from the wedding between Mr. Walter L. Lamont, son of Judge Lamont, and Miss Amelia Ferguson, daughter of Dr. A.R. Ferguson, October 6, 1875. So we're talking a long time ago here. And here's the language, and this is a direct quote. It was an occasion when fashion and etiquette was by no means ignored, but it was an occasion as well when old-time friends gathered in spirit as well as in form about the altar before which they had known from youth up were about to take themselves one of the most sacred of our social and religious rites. The ceremony was gracefully performed in the absence of any pastor of Grace Church by Reverend F. S. Hyde, rector of Christ Church. The bride and groom expectant were accompanied to the altar by Miss Alice M. Nelson of Buffalo, escorted by Stanley B. Cowing of the same city, messengers Leroy Chadwick, Daniel Dole, W. Bruce Douglas, and William R. Chafin acted as ushers and with characteristic grace and appreciation. I mean, the flowery sometimes it's like, oh, my God, I'm tired reading it. But this is the way – that is a very typical
– It is so eloquently put.
I know. It seems like they were falling over themselves to say who can use the most flowery language. Here's a couple other same wedding. Following the ceremony at the church, the customary reception occurred at the residence of the bride's father on East Avenue. While earnestly endeavoring to guard against writing a word in connection with this that might savor to fulsome flattery, a thing properly distasteful of all concerned, it is not too much to say that the generous hospitality and courteous attention to guests the wedding reception ranked with the foremost. That's one sentence, and I'm out of breath reading it. So.
Wow.
Right.
We learned about run-on sentences,
oh,
didn't
my
we?
Gosh, golly.
But
so
boy, he covered everything there.
Oh, he does. Yeah, and it kind of, the writing was fascinating to me, just reading these accounts of these, the weddings or any kind of there were some huge funerals that were put into this timeline in great detail where you can really see what a funeral was like then. So it's really a very detailed look, not just a factual look like this happened or that happened,
right.
But I really tried to include elements that would really give person, so this is what a funeral was like or a wedding was like in 1880 or 1890 or something to that effect.
Certainly, you can really feel what the mm-hmm. family, how the family was reacting and how they went through it, because times have changed.
Yeah.
I'm really, you know, just so grateful that these people took the time to document these events so thoroughly.
Right.
Because who knew, you know, 100 and some odd years right. later, we would be talking about it on the radio and
right.
being so grateful for their
right.
thoroughness
yeah.
of recollection.
Newspapers of those days, and that's what you will kind of get a flavor of when you read this historical timeline, is that they were commenting on the social, they were very socially oriented.
Mm-hmm.
They were less maybe newsy, but more news of the community and news
right.
of the day, and very kind of personal level. I mean, and then some of the, oh my gosh, some of the things you think they would include, like, you know, when someone harmed themselves, you would see detail that you go, wow, that's way too much information.
Right.
But they put it in there. So just a couple other, you know, one of the things, I'm a plumber's daughter, and of course I noticed things like this, but in 1875, Grace Church had steam heat, and it was brought in from a long ways away, according to the description of a newspaper article at the time. And I go, that, you know, you think, wow, how did they heat this huge church?
And sure.
Well, 1875 steam heat.
1875. So. That's a little early. Yeah, because I know the city of Lockport had steam heat for it, didn't it?
One of the first steam heat cities in the country.
Right.
That's a whole nother story, but maybe that's a next good book for me to do.
Oh, that would be great. Talk about the fire hydrants.
The fire hydrants, right.
And some sheer brilliance involved with the infrastructure of the city at the time.
Right.
All right, back to our church.
Let's get into maybe the second chapter. We'll talk about the leadership pieces a little bit. Wow, when Grace Church, when you look at the leaders that were leaders in the church, they were by far the leaders in the Lockport community. They were the barons of industry, banking, finance, building, lumber. Grace Church had it all. They were just a bastion of leadership, as well as the book does cover the full accounting of all the rectors at the parish. I don't cover all the wardens. I don't cover all the vestrymen. The book would be like 900 pages long, so I couldn't do that. But it really highlights for the priests that were there, the rectors that were there, Pastor Dennison, who was the first person there. I do a biography on him. Reverend Eli, biography on him. Reverend Faber, he gets special treatment because of his import to the church in terms of its development of a choir. He brought the choir in, and he was the author of how the windows, the stained glass windows, were to be coordinated, you know, thematically and religiously in the physical edifice of the church. The original windows were etched glass, but his wife died when he first got to Grace Church in like 1894. She passed away, and he petitioned the warden and vestry at the time. He wanted to put two small stained glass windows on the west side of the west side entry, and they agreed. And when they saw the product, and I believe J&R Lamb Studios and then New York City put those in, They were so impressed. They said, we need to put more stained glass windows in. And so he, being a very, very learned man and a very philosophical person, as well as deeply religious, put together a plan in written form. That booklet, that plan is detailed in great detail in this book. You'll be able to see his exact words. It was actually printed for the membership to actually read. It's a historical piece as well as it is a plan. And that really set, that plan was accepted and implemented by a very powerful group of warden and vestrymen unanimously. And from 1897 through 1964, so this plan covered almost over 70 years that these windows were put in the building.
Really?
Yeah, it took that long to finish the plan. And you can imagine how complicated that was in so many respects. But it was all coordinated. So, and I'll talk about that a little bit later,
okay,
in detail about the windows. But Reverend Faber was the driving force of this. So I do a nice biography on him, Reverend Foster, Reverend Jackson, Reverend Massey. So I tried to cover certainly Reverend Zwicker, who was there probably the longest to any of them. But I tried to do a wide variety of history on, you know, earlier, a little later.
Very good. Well, for those of you who may be just joining us here, we're doing the Niagara History Show, and my guest is Shelley Richards from the Niagara County Genealogical Society, talking about her latest book, Grace Episcopal Church, A Select History from 1835 to 2020. If you have any questions, you can feel free to call at 433-1433, and I'm sure Shelley would be happy to answer any questions you might have concerning the history of the Grace Episcopal Church in Lockport. Okay, so we're back to chapter two,
the leadership.
Very good.
So I do some brief histories, bios on some of the wardens, Bishop Boynton, Caverno, Corson. These are alphabetical. Earl, Lurch, Lewis, Merchant, Nixon, Pound, Ransom, Walter, Williams, and then some vestrymen, Arnold, Keep. These are some of the surnames. Millar, Moss, and Woody. Other leaders that I cover are musical. Mr. Cecil Walker, who was a longtime, you know, choir and organ leader, as well as Eugene Burmaster, who was Mr. Organ. I mean, he literally rebuilt the Skinner organ, rebuilt it again after the fire, and then built the final one, which is in there now. And so there's a nice little history on him, a bio on him. I think the thing I'm proudest of in this particular chapter is there was so much information that I was able to find, and again, a lot of this was in the newspapers, about the women leadership at Grace Episcopal Church. And so some of the women, they were basically funded the many church improvements over time, all like kind of the decorative pieces, the fitting out of the altar, the altar railings, the reredos, all the different things that they purchased, the lecterns, things like that, were from the events that these women held on an annual basis. They also ran the church school, which is a huge piece of perpetuating the Grace Church over time, bringing up the young children to practice their Episcopal faith. Some of the people I highlight, was not technically a member of the church, but Eugenia Arnold donated her home to Grace Episcopal Church, the Arnold House, which still stands today, a beautiful piece, and we do deal with that later. Deaconess Harriet Dayton, who was the first female deaconess at all of Western New York, came out of the Grace Episcopal Church parish. Clara Foote, who was a force in the guild, the female ladies' guilds over many years. Marie Bemmett Holly, who was actually one of the founders of kindergarten, along with one of the Merritts. Henrietta Corson Lewis, who was the wife of Clarence O. Lewis, who many people know, a longtime Lockport historian. We do a bio on her. Berenice Merritt, the Merritt family was a force at Grace Church for many, many years, as was Berenice. And then Dora Swanson, who was the first female vestry person in the history of the church. There's a little bio on her and a nice picture that her grandson donated or allowed us to use. So the women were huge contributors, and I think you'll really enjoy reading about that particular chapter, the leadership. Let's see. Structures. This is probably the largest in terms of just volume of information. I really review every structure and really try to delve into, you know, its history and their, when they were erected, especially the three main buildings. There was actually three churches over the course of Grace's history, the original being at the corner of Buffalo Street and Saxon, which is now where St. Mary's Catholic Church, which was formerly where St. Mary's Catholic Church is now the chapel. But that's where the original wooden structure of the church was, and they quickly outgrew that. And by 1853, they had made the decision they need to build a larger church. So they literally moved down the street. They went down Genesee Street, bought a site at Genesee and Cottage, and built the church in 1853. And there's some wonderful articles I found about the building of the church, its erection over time, putting up the steeple, which a lot of people probably don't know, that the original structure of Grace Church had a huge steeple that was blown down, I believe, in 1894. We talk about that. There's a nice article about that. The 1853 structure took about 2 years to build over time. It was officially opened about 1855 for its original service. And then, of course, it goes on multiple, and we talk a lot about the renovations. You can't believe the constant upkeep of to keep that church beautiful. There was some major renovations over time. And we always found, you know, history of those in the newspapers, which is great. So you can kind of see over time how the interior and the exterior changed and get a sense about that. As you all know, the fire, that 1975 fire, I was actually a person who was walking by when they were fighting that fire.
Really?
Yeah, I remember that personally. And what a sad day that was.
Devastating.
There's some, I don't want to call them, there's some just really interesting pictures. I was given access to the Lockport Police Department photos from those fires. There's full-page photos of the fire in progress, and then just the devastation of the post-fire the next day. And there's a lot of time devoted to, in the book to understanding the fire, how that happened, and then the aftermath, the decisions of groups of people. Do we rebuild? Do we rebuild someplace else? Do we rebuild here? Do we do nothing? And the community really made the decision, the parishioners, as well as a lot of community people, donated, people who are not Episcopalian, but had remembered all the community service that Grace had given to Lockport.
Right.
And they basically rebuilt the church within about a year and a half, and it opened up for its first service on Christmas 1976, which is just unbelievable when you think how quickly it was done. We do a brief discussion of the architect and the builder, Mr. Bob Miller Construction, locally here, stepped forward. He was the primary builder and a wonderful contributor to getting that structure back in place. The other things we deal with, parish halls, the building of the parish halls, lots of interesting articles about the laying of the cornerstone of the parish hall, unique, detailed descriptions of how the original parish hall was to look. They actually purchased right next to the original 1853 building on Cottage in Genesee was the original homestead of the Arnold family.
Okay.
Eugenia, maybe it was her family. Eugenia was a, I'm blanking on that name, begins with an F. But anyways, that was her home. So Grace Church purchased the home next to the church, the full lot, which ran from Genesee all the way back to LaGrange. They kept the home and made it the second rectory. The rector lived there. And then the rear part of the property became, on the LaGrange side, became the property for the new parish hall, which, with all the activity they were doing, they desperately needed a place to gather. So that home became the next piece of property that the church acquired, and they built out the parish hall. So we detail that. We got a nice look at that. We talk a little bit about the rectories as well, as well as the building of the newest rectory that is still standing. And then we also go into a lot of detail about the four chapels. Reverend Faber had the original vision to expand the Episcopal presence in the city and town of Lockport, starting with the construction of All Saints Chapel, which is at the corner of Walnut and Vine. And the second chapel was St. Andrew's by the Lake, was built in Alcott, finished in about 1901, thereabouts. And so there's a lot of cool pictures about how those places looked back at the turn, you know, of the century, and lots of really nice detail. You'll really get a good handle on it. Unfortunately, speaking of fires, All Saints Chapel, the history with Grace Church and fires is kind of, you know, unfortunate, because actually All Saints Chapel burnt down about 1909. They had to rebuild that. And then St. Andrew's by the Lake, totally destroyed to the ground by fire in 1927. And they never rebuilt that. But there's some beautiful pictures of what that chapel mm-hmm. looked like. It was really beautiful, just small and quaint, very nice. So I think you'll enjoy that particular chapter as well. Lots of good detail there. Cemetery chapter.
Yeah.
People in Lockport. Yeah.
This cemetery.
Yeah, this cemetery.
That this is little, really interesting.
Yeah, right around Halloween, so a little spooky. But there was actually two cemeteries, Lincoln and Pine. So the southern terminus of Pine Street, right at the corner, there was the Friends Cemetery, and that was the Quakers. And then right next to it was the great Episcopal Cemetery. And it was between, I don't know if you can kind of imagine where Hamilton's Drive now is, off of Lincoln.
Yeah.
That was formerly the back entrance to the Moody brothers, who owned the two big pink houses that what are now the one is the pink house and one's the brick house on Pine Street.
Okay.
That property backed up to what is now Hamilton Drive. So the Episcopal Cemetery sat just east of that, where Hamilton Drive is, and was approximately 100 and it was chains. I did the conversion in the. Let me see if I can see that in my notes.
How curious.
132 feet wide, 198 feet deep. So okay. That's how big the cemetery was. It was donated by Judge Ransom and his family. They had plots in there. I never was able to fully find out how many people were actually buried there. What I was able to determine through a variety of records, there was stuff written all over the place about this particular cemetery, when it actually started, when it got moved, when the stones got moved, when the bodies got moved, if the whatever. So I was able to account for, through different newspaper summaries of this particular event. I did not get access to the minutes of the Grace Church leadership at that time. I did this all through newspaper research. But in 1930, the city was trying to expand and build housing in that end of town. That was the hinterlands back in the 1830s when that was gifted to Grace Church by the Ransom family. Mm-hmm. That was like way out in the country. So the city kept expanding south, and they wanted to basically get rid of the overgrown cemeteries, both of them. I believe the Friends Cemetery eventually moved out to Cold Springs, and Grace Church has 1930, the summer of 1930, there was a wonderful account in the newspaper about, one in done in the 30s when it actually happened, but another one done in like 1989, actually by my cousin, John Foltz.
Oh.
Rest his soul, he's deceased. But he was a historian too, and he did a great story. He interviewed Bernice Merritt, and her daughter, and they told the story of how they remember going over there as they were like moving all these, you know, stones, some bodies, right? Whatever.
Right. Yeah. Here's what you gotta
do. 1930, and they moved to Section 14 at Glenwood. I was able to account for about 65 bodies and or stones. I think there was more stones moved than there were actual bodies because that had been so long abandoned that anybody that was actually in ground was noted to be, quote, dust. I mean, that was actually one of the quotes in the paper.
Sure.
So about 65. The Ransom Stone was the only stone that was moved that is standing now in Glenwood. The rest of the stones that were moved are all on Section 14 in Glenwood is actually on the side of a hill.
Okay.
And they're all laid flat, the stones that were moved. So I've done an accounting of all the people I know to have either been moved or have a stone there. They're all accounted for like an Excel spreadsheet. You can read the names, the inscriptions of the stones that I was able to discern. There's actual pictures. I took all sorts of pictures of the stones so you can see all them. And as best I can, integrated years of history that was kind of all over the place written about this. This particular piece, took me about 2 weeks to put that together in a cohesive fashion. So I think it's a really nice accounting of the cemetery. So that is that chapter. And I do want to leave a little time for the next chapter, which to me is the most tremendous. It covers the artifacts of the organs, the windows, and then there's a variety of other artifacts that survived the fire in 1975 mm-hmm. that I've also taken pictures of and described, and just beautiful pieces. The windows and these artifacts that I talk about were all done by the J&R Lamb Studios, which is the oldest stained glass studio and religious artifact maker in the United States, still operating today. And the beautiful part of that stained glass window section that is, I think you'll really, really enjoy the color photos by Mr. Foley in there. It also includes not only the color photos of the new windows, but it also includes the original artist's rendering, which is the artwork that the developed to actually do the windows the second time, which those windows followed the same pattern with some variation of Dr. Faber's original plan in 1897. There were some major changes. As many of you know, the altar was taken from the south side of the church when it was rebuilt and put on the north side of the church. So we do go into a lot of detail. The pictures in this section, I think, are the most tremendous in the whole book. I think people will really enjoy seeing them. And finally, the ministry section, there's some nice detail about the thrift shop, the Anglican shop, which were kind of institutions in Grace and in Lockport for many, many years. And it's a great way to kind of close out the book of service.
Boy, what a wonderful thing. Well, listen, we're down to about the last minute here. How do we get our hands on this book?
Hey, good. I'm glad you asked that. The book will be available the first week of December at the Niagara County Historical Society gift shop at 215 Niagara Street in Lockport. You can walk in and purchase the book. I just talked with Mr. Moss this morning. The book will cost $35. And again, like I said, half the proceeds will go directly to the Historical Society. The other half will go to Glenwood Cemetery. Online, if you're not in town or you can't get to 215 Niagara Street in Lockport, you can write to this email.
Alrighty.
gracechurchbook@gmail.com. And a book will be shipped to you. The cost, again, $35. There'll be some extra tax and shipping that
sure.
way. But Grace Church Book, you can do it lowercase. Just how it sounds. GRACE Church, CHURCH Book, singular, BOOK, @gmail.com. And make a great gift for the holidays.
Well, it is about that time, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, or for a treat for yourself.
Yeah, well, I was looking at the quality of the paper and the quality of the print in this, and it's It truly is coffee table worthy.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
It's going to be a great book. Well, listen, we're down to the last half a minute, and I would like to thank you so much. Folks, you've been listening to Shelley Richards from the Niagara County Genealogical Society talking about some of her latest work on the Grace Episcopal Church here in Lockport. We've got about, we don't have enough time. But at any rate, how can we get a hold of you if we'd like to get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can reach me out. My email, S-A-N-R, so S-A-A-S-A-N-N-R. 0207 at gmail.com.
All right. Thank you so much.